Welcome, everyone. You're listening to the Western Plains Cultural Centre podcast series. Joining me today is Kent, our curator, Jess, our collections officer, and Andrew, our manager. Today we're focusing on a new media work entitled The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeois Robot 2. This work pays homage to the surrealist filmmaker Louis Bunuel, a 1972 film, The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. It's an interactive work which explores the human-like performance of robots who mimic humans but are never quite achieve that level of humanity. This work is by Wade Maranowski, and he has described the robot as a decadent disco diva of doom. Kent, can you enlighten us as to that, please?
I'll attempt to. the work is inspired by Bunuel's film, which tells the story of a group of upper-class people who are attempting to have dinner with each other, but for whatever reason they can't. And the work mimics that film in the sense that the robot becomes this figure that we try to interact with, but we can't. What I think Maranowski means by the decadent disco diva of doom is he's making a reference to the robot being somewhat camp, in the sense that it's a robot is always trying to be human but never being human, in the same way that a man dressed as a woman is trying to be a woman but is never a woman. And I think the work is... there's a sense of doom about the work because the robot spends its time kind of moving around the space, talking and ignoring us, and it's as if it's sort of going to go around and around in circles, and there doesn't seem to be an end, and it's an ominous kind of piece. So I think it's interesting in the way that the artist has taken... essentially, a film that is one of the cornerstones of surrealism in many ways, or Bunuel certainly was a very influential surrealist, and then using robotics to create a version of that, or a work that has been influenced by that, I think is really interesting. So I think for the viewer, there is a sense of kind of frustration with the work. Because we try to interact with this robot, which has plenty of connotations, and we know it's trying to be human, but of course it isn't, and of course it kind of rejects us. So there is a sort of a sense of frustration on a number of levels. It's a frustrated human or a frustrated robot, whichever.
But there's also this sort of large issue to do with humans' interaction with robotics generally, that we seemingly strive towards creating a lifelike robotic creature, but throughout culture, whether it be literature or film or, kind of culture generally, there's this pervasive fear of robots that they will eventually become too human to the point that they replace humans. Mm. So there is this narrow road that we're going down in terms of fascination and interest in creating the godlike complex of creating robots that are humans, but our innate fear that that will mean the end of human beings.
Yeah, it's a kind of a Frankenstein
exactly,
scenario.
Yeah. So it's this sort of strange fascination and unease at the same time that, it's a whole other kettle of fish if we create a robot that then doesn't want anything to do with us.
Yes.
There's a lot of very Freudian things that you can work like that as well.
All right, Andrew, in thinking about all that, what is it intending to show to us about ourselves? This work
about ourselves as people or
yes,
as robots?
As people.
Before answering that, before moving forward, I'd like to go backwards.
Yep.
I think it's interesting that Kent used the word camp in respect to the robot. If you look in popular culture, such as Star Wars, the C-3PO golden robot is extremely camp.
Yeah. That's right.
But doesn't work as well with the public. By far, R2-D2, the little garbage can on wheels, is a far more popular figure. And I think that what does it show to us about humans is also pulling out some strands from what Jess was talking about, is that we don't want them to be human. We don't want them to look human. We actually are fascinated by them, especially in popular culture. You think of the robots that are popular, the little one that wanted to get home, that was, what was that one called?
Yes.
Wall-E.
Wall-E, yes. Yeah. Wall-E is, again, it has the basics of humanity. It's got a camera that looked like eyes, and I suppose R2-D2 had a camera that, on a head that swiveled, and it had legs, and it sort of beeped at us. And I've never understood why R2-D2 had to beep. You know, I mean, it was just like diarrhea would come out of him, and that's the only way that he could communicate was through sound. And it was just human enough to be endearing without being slightly creepy, which is what C-3PO is. I mean, who would want to be trapped in a room with C-3PO? You know, you'd be in the corner covering yourself. But anyway, so I think, you know, when we look at it, it's very much, and this work, I think, steers away from it. And it's a term that I had never heard until maybe about a year ago, which is the uncanny valley, where as things, and you look at it in CGI films and things, as CGI comes to become more and more lifelike and it loses that animation and heads towards what we might see as reality, we actually, as consumers, we'd reject it. Because we do have that, I'm sorry, I want my animation to be animation. I want my robots to look like robots. I like it if they've got some vaguely human characteristics, like they've got cameras so I know that they're looking at me and I know where they're looking, so I'm not surprised by it. But if they become too human, then that is disturbing to us. And I think that does sort of come across as, you know, the Promethean or the Frankenstein thing that's coming along. What does it tell us about humans? I think that we are perhaps, as Jess said, maybe unsettled by the idea of creating robots. And yeah, I like the idea of a robot that wants nothing to do with us, like the spoiled child that says, I wish I'd never been born. Right? And especially if it's got that ability that you can't actually catch it to turn it off. I think it's a fascinating work, and it's pretentious, and it's got doom, but it's also extremely lighthearted. I think, you know, it does have, you know, if the artist is prepared to call it a disco diva, then yeah, that's got something going for it. I think it's just fabulous.
Okay, to think about as the last part of our conversation, how do you account for, Jess, the fascination robots exert over the general population?
Oh, I think there's a million reasons why people are fascinated by robots. I think it's we enjoy seeing ourselves in things that we make. I think there's a very creative impulse in terms of creating something that looks like us. But I also think it has a lot to do with an awareness that we are possibly fallible, and there's this desire to be kind of exists forever. I think there's a desire for robots to be something that we can create in our likeness and be something that we can have existing forevermore, you know, that our time on Earth is short and you know, we do everything in our power to extend that. And I think robotics is probably the most current version of how we can try and do that. But I think it's also one of the reasons it fascinates us is because I think it, for a lot of people, terrifies them. They may not know it consciously that it's terrifying, but there's a sense of robots existing forever remind us of the fact that we don't, and that we are fallible, and that we are disposable, and robots are something that potentially can replace us. And so I think there's a know thine enemy type quality to people's fascination with robots as well.
I'm unsure that we are all that fascinated with robots. I think the Japanese are. I think that we've kind of come to the conclusion that, well, there's no way we're going to let robots take over and we're in control, so that's not going to happen. I think what's interesting, though, is the role that robotics does play in medicine and in terms of, I suppose, a kind of...
Bionic Man type.
Yeah, the $6 million man is sort of, you know, he's part robot, but the human aspect wins out. And I think where we know we can control robotics is where we're interested. But I still feel that, you know, that last story on the news about another Japanese scientist coming up with a robot, we sort of all tend to just go, oh, you know, silly. We're a bit cynical about robotic, the notion of a robot, you know, anyone that's seen, you know, Lost in Space, that robot is an idiot. And, you know, it hasn't done robots too many favours, you know.
Championing the robots.
So, I know. No, they're not. And I mean, you know, there is that kind of malevolence from, you know, Metropolis onwards.
But I think that malevolence is human created in the sense that it's keeping the concept of robots or robotics subservient because of the innate awareness in humans that has the potential to replace me.
Yeah.
So if I make it feel bad, look stupid, become the enemy, it's a form of control, I think.
And I think interestingly, robotics are actually utilised more than we realise. I mean, certainly the car industry use robots to create cars, and I don't think in the most part that people realise that era of robots is actually already here. That a whole raft of people have been replaced by robots
professional level.
Yeah, in manufacturing, etc. And so I think in some ways we've harnessed robotics to replace human beings, but of course they're still very subservient. And I think this talk about robotics is also something that we can talk about in terms of technology generally, that computers have also the ability to kind of take over in some respects. And there's always that fear that, you know, all the computers are going to come together and, you know,
do stuff.
But we have control over them, so therefore we're sort of not letting them take over. You know, we're not losing control because we made them in the first place.
I would almost argue the opposite, in that I think giving them a body puts them under our control. If you think of someone like in 2001, Space Odyssey, HAL, a far more malevolent, fictional figure, because he was everywhere and nowhere. And it's true, you could just got to find the switch and turn it off, but that's true of everything. But the fact that he had no body made him harder to deal with, because he was just inside your head the whole time.
A character like HAL there is an unease and malevolence about him because he seems to have consciousness. And it's the movement from away from something that is simply mechanical and wires and stuff to having some ability to
ghost
be
machine.
Cognitive that it starts to become unsettling.
I think of a film like Stepford Wives, which also is quite creepy. And what was creepy about that was that they were human born and they looked like normal people, but of course they weren't. They were.
See, I mean, just in the space of sort of 5-10 minutes, the amount of references that we can pull to in terms of cultural kind of signifiers in which we are fascinated by and concerned by and unsure of robotics in some form or another, I think is highlights the fact that whether we are going out and buying little robotic dog toys or whatever, as a human race, as a civilization, we are fascinated by the ability to create human beings in the form of robotics.
Could it have something to do with returning to the motor industry? The fact that the rise of the robot in the motor industry, and I suppose in many of the large manufacturing, has basically halved, quartered, decimated the workforce, which was meant to lead. I remember being a young nipper at school, and by the time I reached the age I'm currently at, I was meant to be working 3 hours a week and spending my entire time.
So, going to work on a hovercraft.
Yeah. And then, you know, I would just have hours and oodles of spare time, but that hasn't happened. And, you know, the rise of the robot in manufacturing has seen, you know, a decline of the working middle class, and, you know, sort of aggregation of power in other hands of the of the creators.
I think the sort of robotics and robots in general promise lots and have yet to deliver. But I think in terms of where I think the work that we're showing here is interesting is not in what actual robots are being made, but how we are interested in the notion of robotics as a concept, a bigger concept, rather than actually interaction with a physical robot. I think the interesting thing about this work is that it's not about kind of the robot's role in human civilization or human society, it's about our relationship with robots. That's, again, pushing the focus of the work back on us as the viewer. So it's about our interaction with the robot, not what it happens to be doing.
Mm.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.